and welcome to another Kill James Bond bonus episode. I'm Alice Caldwell-Kelly. I'm joined, as always, by my friends Abigail Thorne and Devon.
Hey!
How you doing?
It's that time. It's that time again. You got Q's. We got A's. It's a Q&A. We like to do these from time to time. You can ask us questions and sort of like really, really foment some parasociality, you know, because most of all, we are your real life friends.
Yeah, no, most important thing you have to remember is that we are your friends in real life. So it's
we're
okay
also
to like
all single.
Creatively razz me in the comments, and that definitely doesn't just earnestly upset me.
I love you, Anon.
If you find like a sort of like
wow, your name. If you're looking handsome today.
If you find like a sort of a personal insecurity on any three of us, what you want to do is like laser in on that in a really like folksy way. Mm. We really appreciate that. Mm. It makes us feel close
podcast
to you.
GF.
And that's the thing.
Yeah,
making jokes about you on the pod that only you'll get.
This is a real perk that you can get if you date a podcaster.
Yeah, it goes with the downsides, which is you're dating a podcaster.
Yeah, is it a perk?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a perk. But then, yeah.
So, it's been a little minute since we've done...
The downside, sorry, Dem, the downside is if you break up with the podcaster, they will also make jokes about the podcaster. Yeah.
I would never
Not
do such a
Not that I've ever
thing.
Done that.
Mm. I would never... Sorry, I got completely thrown. leave that. I got completely thrown there. I'm really sorry. So it's been a minute or two since we've last done a Q&A. I don't remember when the last one was, but it was the seventh one we've done.
Months and months.
We started off doing these once every like five episodes.
Yeah, it turns
and it
out
was,
that's
that
too
was
many.
So
cues.
Many. And we dropped to 10, and now it's just sort of when we feel like it.
Yeah, just as and when we're around. The last Q&A we did was literally before we started The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It was before To Trap a Spy.
Oh, hell yeah. Well, then this sort of serves as a little bit of a, maybe like an U.N.C.L.E. retrospective.
Yeah, it's nice. It's
a bookend.
So
one each side of the series.
Hmm. Well, let's start with a nice, like, gentle and easy one. Awesome Zero asks, so far, what are your favorite and least favorite movies that you've had to watch for the podcast?
I feel like it's sort of against the spirit of this to pick your own choices.
Yeah, that's
so. I think the one that I've liked most unexpectedly was Mamma Mia 2.
really
here we go
again.
Mamma
Mia 2.
I had a great time with it. Just earnestly a good time. The one that I liked the least, weirdly, Castle of Cagliostro.
Yeah, kind of mid.
I liked Cagliostro. The one there are a lot of ones I've watched that are like forgettable bad. Like there are ones I've watched and have recorded the episode, and then it's just like all semblance of knowledge about that movie's gone. But the one I like earnestly had the worst time watching was probably the modern Jack Ryan.
Mm.
It was just so
a strong choice.
It was just bad, man.
I think you may also be sleeping on Agent Cody Banks 2, Destination London.
Mm. That's just gone from my head. Like that's not stuck with me.
It was a good episode. It was a good episode. It was a lot of fun to record, but watching, that dragged.
I don't know, man. Like all of the kids movies ones we've done, which we've done a remarkable amount of kids movies.
That's true.
Because it's interesting to look at how the culture markets itself to the next generation, but also because it's funny.
Uh-huh.
But like all of them have just disappeared from my head the moment I finished recording. Like they haven't stuck with me in the same way that the modern.
You know, I know that isn't true though.
If you play the Landon drop right now, I'm going to shoot you with a gun.
No,
that's, be clear.
That's not the drop. The drop is
somebody ring the dinkster.
Oh, forever in a hole.
Well, I liked that one. That's like the bad children's movies
fine,
are just bad
fine,
children's
fine.
Movies. The Spy Kids movies have a genuine place in my heart.
Mm.
Okay, fine. You know what? What about So You're the Dog That Likes to Blow Up Buildings? That was a children's movie.
That was a children's movie. Yeah,
careful,
you got another one.
Also
fuck,
a children's
I've already
movie.
Forgot about Flushed Away. So did I. Like some of the bad ones. Careful, some of the bad ones slide off my brain.
On.
I think in terms of favorite films that we watch for the main feed, Spy with My Face like was a wild. I like hooted and hollered and cheered whilst watching that.
It was really good.
That was
the
really
vault?
Nice.
Come on.
Oh yeah,
what
the vault
drops
was
do
so
I have
good.
From that?
That was such a good episode. You don't
feel anything, the clown. I can tell you. The inflatable clown. Oh, that was so good.
The inflatable clown. That was like the genesis of the cigarette that kills you instantly.
Yeah. I also enjoyed, on an intellectual level, watching the Harrison Ford, Jack Ryan films, just because, like, oh, they don't make films with this politics anymore. It really kind of made the political thesis of this podcast, like, click in a way.
Clear and Present Danger.
Yeah. Oh, I think in terms of, like, bonus feed, like, the film that made the most impact on me was Hedwig, which was, like, genuinely, like, life-changing. And I would never have seen it without that, because I'm just kind of quite culturally ignorant. I'm still, like, grateful to Alice for introducing me to that film, which is just,
completely,
like,
agree.
Oh, I mean, any time. I'm still kind of sad that I, like, had a swing and a miss, kind of, with All About My Mother. But every time I think about what's going to be sort of, like, most emotionally devastating, and I just, like, load that one up into the chamber.
I think because it followed Hedwig, which had such a big, like, there's now a Hedwig poster on the walls of my heart, a small one. But, like, I think because All About My Mother had to follow that, it just didn't quite have the same impact.
Sure.
Yeah,
that's what I'm striving towards. You know, is that kind of, like, emotional devastation? Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about guys in that case, because we've had a lot of guys we like to see. Mr. Venom asks, out of all the guys you like to see, do you have any definitive, like, you see the name on the casting list and you're like, fuck yeah, I'm going to see my boy go?
I would say that that's sort of against the essence of a guy I love to see, because a guy I love to see is crucially a surprise. It's a guy that I don't think of often until I'm reminded of them by seeing their face.
It's the best kind of blorbo is the blorbo who's a surprise.
That's true.
Yeah. Where I think, oh, fuck, that's that guy from, and I have to go through the, like, mental Rolodex to think, what else have I seen you in?
I think genuinely, and this is for the podcast, like, gold standard guy I love to see is Vladek Shebal. Because he's only shown up in two additional movies, and both times it's been, like, full caps in the group chat moment. They've got Kronstein in this bad boy.
The ultimate guy we like to see.
Yeah. What a don.
there's a guy that I would have loved to have seen had I known about him at the time.
The subjunctive guy we would have loved to have seen.
Yeah. Which is, in Tomorrow Never Dies, if you remember Henry Gupta, the, like, hacker guy, that's Ricky Jay, the, like, close-up magician. I didn't know shit about him. I read a very interesting sort of long article about him. He was, like, one of the best sleight-of-hand guys in the world working. He was, like, sort of, like, an incredible, like, historian of, like, scams and magic. And had I known that at the time, I would have been like, holy shit, that's Ricky Jay. I've seen incredible card tricks. You can watch him on YouTube. And, like, that's the guy that the one that got away, you know, the guy I wish I could have seen.
That's fair. Yeah, 100%. Okay. I guess, speaking of, HJ asks us, over the course of the pod, is there a particular performer you've come to really like, either by gaining a deeper appreciation of their acting or by just elevating them to a guy I love to see?
I have an answer, but anyone else want to, like, go first?
I do. I do have an answer to this, and I suspect that I will be accused of, like, you know, career politicking here, but this is a genuine, like, sincere answer. Genuinely, Daniel Craig. Like,
100%.
I had seen most of the Craig Bond films before we started the podcast, or all the ones that had come out, and I hadn't really thought too deeply about them. But actually, having gone back and seen his performance in that now, also, like, having done more acting since then myself, and also having seen him in the Glass Onion films, I'm just like, damn, okay. He is actually, like, a really good actor, like, technically. And also, I think he is, like, getting better in his career. Like, he was good to start, and he's, like, getting better. And I went back and I watched The Invasion recently. He was in the reboot of The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. He was the kind of male lead in that. And it's, like, interesting to see how that fits into, like, his career progression. Being, like, he's good in that, very solid. And then he's, like, getting better. Genuinely, the answer is Daniel Craig.
I cannot screen anyway.
No, I absolutely co-sign. I have two answers, and they're both 100% serious. Off of the Man from U.N.C.L.E. films, David McCallum. Because I've now seen, what, like, 12, 13 straight hours of David McCallum acting, and in some, like, undignified, ridiculous situations that, like, TV and, like, movies of TV will put you in, and carrying them off with, like, perfect aplomb. And I really, really admire that. And I think he sort of, like, has this, like, subtlety and, like, nuance and reserve that really sort of, like, it, like, carries a lot of scenes he's in.
He's another guy who got it, like, better. Like, he was good to start with, and then 15 really years later, fair, he improved. I love seeing an actor do that. It gives me Alien. Hope.
my second one is based on having seen Jennifer's Body, Megan Fox.
Yes.
I would have 100% laughed about a Megan Fox joke before I had seen Jennifer's Body, because I'd maybe seen her in, like, Transformers, half paying attention. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd
sorry, was that the subtitle of the most recent one? Transformers.
Transformers. There's another one.
It's back. But yeah, no, I think she genuinely has been, like, slept on as an actress for lots of sort of very misogynistic reasons, and, you know, profoundly exploited in a business where, you know, a lot of people get exploited. And it's just, it's really sad, because she's a fine actor.
Damn good performance.
And I think it's the kind of thing, like, it sounds like a joke when you say it, because it's so foreign to people, like, talking about, like, acting seriously, to go, oh, Megan Fox, you know, you're like primed to laugh at that.
Yeah.
And that's a structural issue. But, like, no, she should have been in contention. She should have, like, had the career that lets you like bring her name into those conversations without anyone going, wait, hold on a second, what?
I hope there is someday a McGenaissance.
Yeah.
The McGenaissance beginneth now. My guy is a little bit of a niche pick, but, like, he's a guy that plays exactly one character, and every time I see him, it's like, ah, he's playing his character again, and I love to see it, and it's Flip Baker Hall. Just good.
I don't recall.
Jesus. Me. He was in Air Force One. He's just sort of like the elder statesman CIA agent. That's his sort of, like, go-to guy.
The guy who, like, goes, like, Mother of God into the phone or whatever. That guy. Yeah. Okay.
I just like him. I don't know. I think he's neat. Yeah. Moving on.
I just think he's neat. Yeah.
I just googled it. That guy.
Yeah.
Boss from Bruce Almighty is what he is in my brain.
If you see him, you go, this guy. Like, that's the essence of a guy I love to see. Is a guy that you love to see, but you wouldn't be able to name without seeing him.
Yeah, the essence of the guy we love to see.
Essence of a guy we love to see.
This is a question that we cannot answer on the podcast.
Essence of guy we love to see.
This is a question we cannot answer on the podcast, but I know that the answer to this is yes, which is, do you have any actors you hate to see?
Every time I see them,
I'm just like, fuck. I hate this guy. He always sucks.
Yeah,
I do genuinely have an act. There is one at the moment who keeps turning up things. I'm just like, oh god,
Chris
Pratt.
Always
shit. Like,
Pratt's never been good.
No.
The guy who plays Jim from Jim and Pam Office. Office Jim Pam.
Oh, fucking yeah. That guy. Chad Strahelski or whatever the fuck his name is. He was in. Played Jack Ryan.
Jim Halpert
on TV. Where the fuck did I get Chad Strahelski from?
Fictional character. I've written Jim Office. I should have gone Jim Office actor. John Krasinski. Uh-huh. That's the boy.
I can't name the actor who I hate to see because, you know, I'm currently working and everything, but I will show an image of them to the webcam so my co-host can see.
Wait, hold on. Continue holding
on. I agree with you 110%.
It's shit every time.
Wait,
it's the same
why?
Performance. Because it's shit every time. The performance is exactly the same. And I'm like, I realize I'm not one to talk, like, you know, I'm not at that level, and, like, I'm still establishing it, I'm still building my skills, but I'm like, every time I see him, and this is the same bag of tricks and everything.
She's so pretty.
She is pretty, yes.
Speaking of, I just recently saw Infinity
Pool. I
haven't
acknowledged
and
on the record.
A guy that I hate to see, but, like, brackets complimentary, is Mia Goth. To look upon Mia Goth is a problem to me, but they use it for such good effect.
Mia Goth is the name of a sim. That's fucking Cassandra and Mortimer's daughter, I'm pretty sure. Or whatever.
I don't
fuck are you two talking
keep
about?
Up with sim? What are you
You didn't play The Sims? You didn't play Sims.
Playing Impossible Creatures in Age of Mythology. That was my take.
Almost as if you Doctor, it's almost like you were never a teenage girl. Like, what's wrong with The Sims?
I think that's a problem we all share.
Well, no, I can do my fallback position of I was a teenage girl, but neither I nor anyone else knew it, which is almost as good. Cope, see it. Yeah.
That's
Mia Goth.
That's the one.
Yeah.
No. She's not. She just looks like that.
Leave that in.
So I'm like doing sign language through the webcam here. Seriously?
Leave. No, she's not. She just looks like that in.
She's so good at playing a really unsettling woman. And by that, I mean she's just a really unsettling woman. They use it for such a good effect in movies like Infinity Pool or what's it called?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I don't remember the name of the most recent one.
There's a big thing on my wall and it's ticking.
No.
I'm sure.
Okay.
She's a cisgender woman, bestie. I would say, if you want a drop of that, I think I would say Chris Pratt, Tom Cruise, another guy I hate to see.
Really?
I'm marking my big do not release
Tom
to
Cruise,
free feed
Tom
button
Cruise
on this
gets
one.
Like, Tom Cruise gets sucked off all the time for like, oh, he's a movies guy. He loves old movies. And no one mentions the fucking Thetans. You know, no one mentions the sort of like Scientology, like slave labor, fucking lawn manicurists and shit. You know, and all I'm asking is, first of all, where is Shelley Miscavige, and second of all, why does he act so sinister the second anyone like calls him on his bullshit? There's a real darkness in Tom Cruise, and I don't think we're gonna find out any of it. For a long time, but no, mark my words, do not trust.
Again, this one will not be being unlocked at any point in our entire podcast's runtime.
It's good that we get
stand
that
by
out
it,
on,
like,
the, on the on the page
swiftly
before we
moving along
to the Mission Impossible films. Like, we've said it now.
All right.
I can play nice if we do the Mission Impossible films after this, but I needed to say now, this is a sinister fucking man. And when we do the Mission Impossible films, I want to make you guys watch Collateral, both because it's a great movie and because I think it is Tom Cruise revealing too much of himself and playing a bad dude.
Similar sort of a vein, Amy asks a question that is always devastating to be asked, which is top five films. No, like,
just generally,
cutting down on that, just top five films. I am just gonna name films I love. I don't have the time to be doing a top five. Mm-hmm. But my favorite film of all time right now is 12 Angry Men. Just absolutely adore that movie, top to bottom.
That's a great movie. That's a really good
movie. We watched it recently. It's just so good. Like, not the remake, to be clear, not the remake, the one from the fucking 50s that's in black and white. Perfect film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I have a top five, but I do have films that like stood out to me as very significant in my life. So Castaway was a film that meant a huge, huge amount to me as a young person, in particular kind of puberty age, that I would love to do on the podcast at some point. It just makes me weep. Similarly, Hedwig, like, again, I would put that on the same kind of pedestal as like films that meant a lot to me. Weird choice, but The Color Out of Space with Nicolas Cage.
Oh, Nick Cage? Fuck,
I
loved that movie.
I watched that in the kind of like week before I came out to myself, and like I watched it like late at night, and it like really burrowed into my heart and like screwed with my brain. That's just kind of because of the time of life. It's not really the film; it's the time of life at which I encounter it. I would really say. I'm trying to think about another two.
Late era Nick Cage has slept on quite a lot, I think.
That's 100%
There's like
true.
Golden era Nicolas Cage, which we all know is like Con Air, things like this. But like Color Out of Space, Pig, I think The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent as well. These are all like movies that I genuinely love.
Adaptation?
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen Mandy. These are both on my list of things I need to check out.
I'd say for five films. The Duke of Burgundy, The Bitter Tears of Petra von Kant, Handmaiden takes me up to 3. Breathless and fucking Showgirls.
Nice.
If you push me to 5, that's what I come up with, like, off the dome. I could do 50 quite happily. And I think probably for my own edification, after we finish the recording, I'll just sit here with the microphone off and I will just name 50 movies that I think are my favorite to an empty room, and just be quite fulfilled.
All right. Here's two that have passed my brain. The Fall. I really enjoyed 2006 Tarzan Singh. Perfect movie. Beautiful to look at. Mad Max Fury Road. Genuinely just like fantastic.
Right.
One of those movies that I could put on at any point in my day and I would just sit down and watch the entire thing. Just a perfect film.
It's not really a film, but it's a specific actor's performance in one film. So The Power of the Dog, which was a Western, kind of low budget Western, which we'll have to watch at some point. Which the film itself is like pretty good. We'll have to do Django in that case. So yeah, but Kirsten Dunst's performance in that is so fucking good. And I'm like, oh my, this is an actor who's getting better. Her casting is changing and she's like really leaning into it in a major way. She's brilliant in that film. And I was like, yes.
So Jane Campion, right? Do you ever see Top of the Lake, her TV series with Elizabeth Moss? Mm-mm. Really good. Really, really, really good. What I would describe as a stab along with The Fall, brackets TV, at like feminist deconstruction of like cop show, of like crime show, of like true crime. It's really, really good.
I guess it's not a film, but like another performance that I really like that means a lot to me is Carrie Ann Moss in Jessica Jones season 1 is so fucking good.
I could see that.
The acting in that is fucking phenomenal. She's brilliant. She's also lovely.
I'm also gonna highlight something that I've only recently started watching and I just adore all of, is the entire filmography of Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson. Just fucking spot on. Spring, fantastic. Resolution, perfect. Watch Resolution first. Something in the Dirt, perfect. The Endless, perfect. Synchronic, perfect. Like, just banger after banger. Absolutely love everything they've put out.
Just reminded me, speaking of Westerns, of my favorite Western. You're going to struggle to shut me up about this for the rest of the episode. I'm going to keep naming movies I like. But when we do Western season, the first thing that I want to do, my favorite Western, Tombstone. Because, boy howdy, Val Kilmer looking sick as fuck as Doc Holliday. It's a great movie. I cannot evangelize about this. If you want a movie to watch tonight, like if you're just like, Alice, I want to like film my evening. I want to spend like 2 hours. I want to have a good time. Tombstone. Watch it. You certainly will not regret watching Tombstone.
We should do Western season and we should do the first episode of Django. And even though it's only an hour long and it's TV, I can fill the time by like telling a huge stories from the set. Like,
I would absolutely love that. Genuinely, with all of my heart, I would love that. Even if we don't record it. But it just sounds fun.
I haven't seen it yet.
I like Gangster, the Cop, the Devil is one I watched recently, which I really enjoy because it's got my favorite huge guy in it, who I'm going to remember the name of in just a second. I believe it's Ma Dong Suk. He's in Train to Busan. He's like the big guy in that. He's the big guy in this. He plays a gangster who works with a cop to find a serial killer, and it's perfect. It's a great movie.
Tell you what else. Sounds is really it? Kind of a rogue choice and one that's a little bit slept on. A film I really enjoyed was the Anna Karenina film with Keira Knightley. Because it's made in a really interesting way, which we may have to watch it. It's like filmed like a play, like you're watching a stage show. It's a very strange and esoteric style of filmmaking that I think really captures what I love about Russian literature. I'm like quite a capital R romantic person, prone to a lot of like big feelings and like big emotions. I'm definitely in a kind of sensual and sentimental phase of life right now. And I think that really just captures what I love about Russian literature, is this feel of like everything's like 12 out of 10, a million out of 10, 1,000. Like, everything's just like so big, and like the passion and the clashing and the, I love it.
Oh, fuck. You know what else I forgot to do? I forgot to mention any Paolo Sorrentino movies. So I'm going to have us watch The Consequences of Love at some point, because I really enjoyed that movie. But I saw Last year, end of last year, I saw The Hand of God, and it's a great movie. It's just a really like sweet to a personal movie. It reminds me a lot of Almodovar, but like Italian, and just like it's so fucking textural. You know, you can fucking feel shit coming off, but it's great. And it also has a lot of Italian women with like interesting noses getting their tits out. So like, of course, I love it.
You don't smell anything like Italian food.
Where do I get the surgery to get the like Italian nose? Tell me, please. Having like more added, you know.
I've got one more. I've got one more film that I watched, totally random choice, found on Netflix, and it's incredible. Mm. It's called To the Bone, and we may have to watch it on the podcast at some point. It has nothing to say about masculinity. It's about a woman who has like a very severe eating disorder, and it's like fucking amazing. It's starring I forget her name, but she plays Emily in Paris, and you're like, oh god, she's gonna like Collins. Silly like, you know, comedy film. No, she gives this fucking amazing performance. Like, if you haven't seen that, listeners, go see it. Make sure you're in the right headspace, and like, major fucking content warning. But like,
Jesse Billington asks, what British reality TV show would you appear on if you had to? Like, I guess we've got a gun against our heads and we have to be on one British reality TV show.
So I have a serious answer, and I have a sort of like sort of more comedy answer. My serious answer is Great British Pottery Throwdown. I don't remember if it has great on there or not.
I would love to be on the Pottery Throwdown. Rose, yeah.
First of all, it seems like a lot of fun, but also I'm mutuals with the like actual pottery technician.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Like, friend of the show and like, friend of me personally.
Yeah,
Rose.
Exactly. Like,
yeah, fucking great. Absolute.
So, also, I was in this like Rose. Weird situation where like she got recognized like 3 times. And I got to be on the other side of what that's like when you're having someone in the record. And I was just like, oh.
Yeah, what am I, fucking chopped liver? Come on, that was
It's like, and Abigail Thorne. That's my serious answer. Just hang out with Rose. My my other answer is, this is a guilty pleasure for me. I love The Apprentice. Because the BBC Apprentice is a kind of like seer school for young Tories. And they are merciless with them. I wouldn't compete. I would just want to be a fly on the wall, because you just get the 20 thickest motherfuckers in England who all think that they're entrepreneurs. And then you just throw them at a basic task like, I don't know, draw a clock on this piece of paper. And Alan Sugar, the grumpiest piece of shit in the world, is going to go, oh, it's not a very good fucking clock, is it? And then, like, you know, they cry. It's fantastic. I love seeing them get traumatized because I'm a bad person and they deserve it. And, like, I love to see them fail. I love to see them like have emotional difficulties as they reckon with the fact that actually maybe not everyone can be a girl boss, and maybe you should like have stuck to the day job. And I really, really, really enjoy it. So that's my guilty pleasure answer, The UK Apprentice. I would just be there just to soak up the immaculate vibes of, yes, babe, I wrote a business plan. It's got 13 spelling errors in the first page. I am shitting myself on national television. It's beautiful.
Not unrealistic. My fake answer is Naked Attraction. Obviously, if anyone free me a second
pans
my
down
body,
to the
I would kill myself
only.
On the spot.
Yeah.
But like, I think I'm handsome enough
getting
to make it work.
Getting a trans person on Naked Attraction would be like truly, like, the country would
that.
Tear
They've,
itself apart.
No, they've had that a bunch of times. Oh. Like, I've seen it a few times. It's like, it's been done.
And the world
had
didn't
girl
end.
Dick on Naked Attraction. No.
And the world did not end.
And boy pussy.
Nice.
Golden Balls, maybe I might be on. I could be on. They did something recently that was like, I don't know if it was like straight to Netflix or some shit, but like they did a series recently that was like similar to Werewolf in the. Everyone's doing tasks, but like some of you are like the murderers or whatever. And
traitors.
That's the fucking spice. Yeah, the traitors. 100%. I'll be on the traitors. I'd love that.
Yeah, that seems like a lot of fun. Like, especially towards the end, it gets genuinely, like, emotionally devastating. You're asked to, like, betray someone you've been, like, living with and making real-life friends with for, like, 12 weeks or whatever. And I get fully sadistic on my reality show shit. I'm right there. Like, I'm not fully, like, psychopathic. I'm not watching, like, Love Island and being like, yes, fucking break his little heart or whatever. But things like The Traitors, things like The Apprentice, where I can rationalize to myself that these people have brought it on themselves and they deserve it. Yeah, no, hook it into my veins, you know?
I don't know if I really have an answer. I don't know many reality TV shows. And also they tend to sort of fit into two categories in Britain. One of which is like your Bake Off's, like you have to come on and be twee. And I don't know if I can really do that because I'm quite a sort of serious person. Just generally. I don't know if I could really do that. I don't have much appetite for that kind of like saccharine, like everything's fine Britishness. And the other one is I think there's kind of a strong vein of classism that runs through a lot of British TV. I think a lot of the sort of entertainment value of stuff like Big Brother and stuff like Love Island, I think to a certain extent is like, look at these sort of like people who are not from high socioeconomic backgrounds often.
I'll absolutely indict myself for
being what we associate of like being a bit thick and vapid. And
The Apprentice is exactly like that. Oh, you're being punished for social climbing.
Yeah.
But then I think to myself, like, oh, this is, you know, also what we built the entire economy for, is these people running like scam Instagram businesses. Mm. I say businesses.
And my sort of temperament and indeed my socioeconomic background doesn't really fit with either of those. So I don't really know what my place in British reality TV would be. That's probably why I don't have one.
Do you want to know British reality TV I've been thinking about a lot recently? Is Snog, Marry, Avoid. This was a show that ran from 2008 to 2013.
The
point of it was they would, for listeners who maybe aren't familiar with this, who are like under 30, in which case obviously fuck off, or maybe you're American, in which case fuck off. But it was a TV show where they took like someone who was part of like a subculture, like maybe they were a goth or something like that, and they took their photo out and they just asked people on the street, like, would you snog, marry, or avoid this person? And then after that, they gave them this sort of like make under where they just made them look normal and then asked.
Yeah, it was
again.
The normalification thing. And they're like,
it was such, it's such a perfect way of just being like, this is British society, is just like, look, you're fucking weird looking, aren't you, idiot? Try looking normal. Now more people want to marry you. And it's like, what do you...
I want to say it was Stacey Dooley, but like, yeah, she would absolutely like sit them down and be like, first of all, your bullies were right. And what we're going to do is we're going to fucking slap some foundation on you. We're going to get you into some like clothes we bought at Next. And, you know, we're going to, like, clean you up a bit.
Step into the averageification machine. It's the opposite of the fabulous...
It was a show where they were just like,
yeah,
they were taking people who were slightly, yeah, like were non-standard, right? Like they had like styles that didn't correspond to the mainstream culture, or, you know, I think we can all look around the room right now and be like, maybe these people
yeah,
were
freaks,
queer. I don't know, something like that, maybe. And just being like, wouldn't it be better if you stripped away every aspect of your personality and were normal? And like they would end the show being like, yeah, I should be normal now. And like that would be the title card. And it's like, what? What?
Do you fit the normative standard?
It was years, 2008 to 2013. Like,
oh, they ran this for ages.
Seasons of this thing.
What I remember, and this may just be a false memory I implanted in myself to try and make this bearable. I don't know if this is true. Someone out there will remember. I remember the one time they accidentally made this wholesome where they got to the queer person too late and they had already transitioned, and it became a show about, oh fuck, we just gotta help this young person in their transition by like getting them a bunch of like clothing that matches their gender and teaching them how to do makeup. And they, you could tell they hated making it too, because they were like, no, this is the part where we say that actually you're like chav scum and no one's going to want to marry you, right? Because that's our normal thing. And instead they were just like doing this quite nice series of things for, I think, this like young girl, where it was like, okay, we got a bunch of professional makeup artists.
Her up like early on, hoping that this would be a kind of like forced detransition, but the time they made the series, it was too late, and they ended up like totally backfiring. I love it. That is a reality show I would love to see, which I think would probably be problematic for the same reasons, which would just be like helping somebody early in their transition. I think it would probably end up being like kind of normative and like very binary for the same reason. But like, yeah, I would, yeah, I think that would be interesting and had potential to be wholesome. Queer Eye, I mean, for the queer person.
The, like, constant Nazi protest outside anywhere you tried to film it.
It's just such a perfect like microcosm of not understanding the point. Like, it's like you take a person who is dressed like a goth and you go, we've asked 100 people on the street if they would snog, marry, or avoid you, and like a bunch of people would avoid you, and it's like, well, that's sort of the point.
Yeah, it's like
sort of a self-selecting thing.
The idea of like sitting someone who's a goth down and going, I need to tell you you're a goth. Like, they're not aware.
I just want to make it clear you look weird. And it's like, yeah, I put some effort into this, actually.
Putting people's like appearance to like a popular vote, too, as if sort of like deviation from the norm was antisocial behavior. And the other thing I remember was that at the end of episodes of that, they would follow up to see whether they had like committed to the program. And they never did. Like, all the goth kids went back to being goth because they liked it.
And all because they're fucking friends with goth, like, probably.
Yeah.
It's so fun. It was just
horrible.
Horrific.
And this was like, this was considered normal in our culture for many years.
It's a bad country, I guess. I gotta tell you. All right. From the heavy to the quite light here. Topper's Unpleasantries, interesting name, asks, if you were in John Wick 5, how would you go out? To which I mean, you know, obviously they mean how would you get killed, but I'm going to expand that somewhat to like, what role would you like to play in John Wick 5 if you could get in there?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be the guy who like tries to get him while he's experiencing like a serious emotional moment, like a plot beat is happening to him, and I'm like coming up behind him with a gun or whatever, and I die like extra bad because of that, because we got to show his emotional turmoil.
Oh,
like, he empties like a full magazine into my face or something.
Realistically, I would be one of the guys that is like a normal henchman who gets obliterated in a way too brutal manner. Just like an unnecessarily hardcore way. Because he loves to do that. He'll kill like 10 guys normal, and then the fifth guy will show up and he does some weird shit to them.
Oh, imagine being the henchman who dies on like the comedy beat. Like, he like ricochets something off you and you both look at each other for like 1 second and then he kills you. Imagine being that guy.
I think about the guy at the start of John Wick 2 where he just like, there's this huge guy like runs at him and he just shoots him in both knees and then leaves. That's what I reckon I would be. Just like, oh shit, this guy's here. And then he gets like Indiana Jones guy with the sworded. Just like, pow! All right, moving on.
I think given my casting, the role I would like to play in a John Wick film and that I probably could play is like the dragon henchman who hunts John Wick. Kind of the new assassin, like, oh, she's the new hotness. And then I get owned. Nice. I get owned by John Wick.
But he leaves you alive as a sign of respect.
Maybe, yeah. Depending on like how brutal I've been throughout the film to other people on my way to trying to kill John Wick.
Yeah, 100%. I would also maybe like to be a sort of Peter Serafinowicz style sommelier.
Yeah.
I love how hard they lent. I've just rewatched John Wick, basically, is what's happening here.
So good.
I'm going to watch John Wick 3 when we're done recording. I love the way they lent into the weird shit.
Again.
Like, they were just like, they finished the first movie, tight 90 minutes, first of all, perfect. And then they were like, fuck it, the fun parts of this, let's just turn that up and drop all the shit that was like, wasn't a core part of John Wick. Are they good movies? Who's to say? But are they fun?
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
I would love to play...
I will make the stand they're good movies.
I'd love to play a villain. I'd love to just play a character who like gets to do something. Like, because we're at this stage in arts, British and less so American, but definitely British stuff now, where like if you have a trans character, they can be there, They can even have lines. Sometimes. Some. Not many, but some. But they can't do anything that affects the plot. They can't do anything cool. They'll just kind of hang out. And we are starting to change that now. Like, I've had some auditions lately for roles that are, like, getting better at that sort of thing. And, like, you know, fingers crossed, so someone's going to have to get the role for the big thing I went out for the other day. Even if it's not me, but someone will. And it's a damn good role. So that's starting to change. But, like, I would just love to play a character who, like, gets to do something. Gets an arc, you know?
Oh, to have an arc.
That'd be great,
imagine.
You know?
I'm going to say, though, that John Wick has done this, because the character who you described, the, like, you know, dragon henchwoman who, like, tries to kill John Wick, or the dragon henchman, and John Wick 3, that was a they-them. That's a non-binary actor playing a non-binary character.
That's true. Yeah, and they had Yayun Ruyin in there as well, who is my boy.
So, all right, the franchise has form.
That's
Keanu,
right.
If you are listening, you know.
By the time this comes out, I will have seen John Wick 4, and you can bet my ass I'll be tweeting about it. So, John Wick, what a movie. Right. Here's okay, two musical questions. Max Piper asks, if you were forced to cobble together a plot out of an artist's discography a la Mamma Mia, which artist would you most want to do that with? They worded it better, but I stumbled
that's
over my words.
That's such a good question. If we had to make a jukebox musical, who would be? That's so good.
Right, I almost want to make it more difficult on myself and just pick, like, fucking King Crimson or some shit. Just be like, all right, what are we doing here? Are we going to put this one together?
Scrolling through my list of artists.
Warren Zevon.
Warren Zevon, not a bad call. Not a bad call.
Warren Zevon. Jungle Work. Excitable Boy. No.
Left at London. There you go. That's what I want to do.
Oh, that's a good answer. That's a really good transgender street Lennon.
Yeah.
Lennon?
Yeah, yeah.
Transgender street Lennon.
I'm the transgender street Lennon.
Street Lennon?
You see my fucking pride speeches?
Right, well, that's the whole rest of the episode sorted. There's just fucking
if we
bits
did
about that.
Episode titles, this one would be Transgender Street Lennon.
Transgender Street. Does anyone want to mock up what, like, one of the album arts for any of the volumes of Transgender Street Legend with, like, a statue of Lennon on it? That would be ideal. Thank you. Yeah, Mountain Goats is another obvious one for me. Cause it's like, I know.
The joke answer is Philip Glass, right? That's my joke answer. I'm scrolling through my list of artists here.
Obviously. Nat does songs that aren't just the transgender street legend ones, obviously, like Marion Zajncik.
I know,
for the benefit of the audience, we're not typecasting this.
I think my, like, joke obvious and serious answer is genuinely Kim Petras, because her first album, like Turn Off the Light, was, like, so hard and, like, so distinctive and has this, like, really, like, goth synth pop style. And she's gotten, like, gradually more poppy, and then slut pop is, like, a very, very different thing. It's obviously very explicit. So I'm like, how the fuck are you supposed to write a character out of this? Like, the character has to be some kind of, like, vampire who then, like, becomes a massive slut, and then what now? Like, I guess then you finish on Unholy.
Here's a fucking answer for you. Hall & Oates.
Oh, that's good.
A lot of bangers, a lot of quite short bangers too. Like, easy to space out in a movie.
Oh, I have an answer.
You could do dance sequences.
My answer is, I do a trans musical, but I do it with The Killers. Because as I started off saying, at like 3 in the morning, The Killers make transgender music for transsexuals.
Yeah. Do you know what Kim Petras' favorite song is? Human. I saw her play it acoustic.
Why would I know that?
Another interesting answer, Muse.
Stadium rock, kind of, like, yeah.
Really like Muse's work. I was about to say Meatloaf, but that's already a musical.
Oh, here's a question about the concept that we're sort of working with here. Jazz Fox Canning asks, how has watching a new movie every week affected your life? Would you recommend it for people who aren't doing it for a podcast?
0%. I already do that. I would have done that. Exactly the same. I just get to talk about it with my friends, which is great, and I love it. I'm very grateful for the opportunity, but I watch about as many movies as I would have otherwise, because I just do this. I'm just like this.
Is it? I don't know. Is it like beneficial that it's like sort of a wider net because it's three people picking instead of just you?
Yeah, that's what.
Yeah,
I've
definitely
about
seen
it.
Stuff I wouldn't.
Yeah, have. The variety's been nice. I definitely watch more films because I'm a workaholic, right? So I don't have any time off because I have a problem, and I just fill up all my time with work. So making watching films into work has meant that I watch more films, whereas otherwise I wouldn't have done, because if it's not, I can't like relax. I can't like have leisure time. So the idea of like sitting down and watching
a job where you relax,
she wouldn't get home in it. Yeah. It wouldn't work.
Well, what is there such a job? Like
relax at a later point. To me, I mean, it's been a profound effect on my life. Basically, it's turned me into a cinephile. Quite honestly, because now not only am I watching movies that my two dear friends are bringing to me, and my life is being improved massively by them, but I'm also now just like throwing my own net out wider, like Saloon, for instance. I like have never watched a single like African movie before, but after that I've watched a couple, and it's just like opened up whole new vistas to me.
I tell you what, actually, that watching Saloon and watching things like All About My Mother and so on has also had a bit of an impact on my career too, because I'm getting offers for stuff and I'm auditioning for stuff that maybe previously I would have turned down, because I've been like, oh, this is like a film that's being made in like another, I can't say too much, but there's a film I auditioned for recently that had I not seen those, I might have gone, no, I'm not going to do that. Whereas now I'm like, oh, actually, you know, that might be fun. And I did audition for it and had fun. So yeah.
I'm really glad. Like, and I can't really take credit for it or anything, but I'm going to try anyway and be like, This is like, I'm so glad, because I love movies. I love sharing movies with my friends. I love getting to share movies that I like that you might not have thought of. And if I can like sort of like get you to like explore stuff on your own and want to do that, that's incredible, because you like go off in like whole new directions I never would have thought of. And it's like, it's great. You know, and I have no idea where we might end up with this, and I'm so happy for it.
Oh, it's just a treat. It's just a fucking treat.
It's a delight.
I watch a movie, I talk about it with my friends, and then like if it's a good movie, then it stays with me. If it's a bad movie, then I get money. Like, it's just, there's no losing here. Like, this is.
I also forget about the bad films we watched. Did we watch that? I'm like, oh, whatever.
Yeah. You know, you should watch tonight. Tombstone.
You know what I'm watching tonight? Naruto.
I'm gonna watch John Wick 3 for.
Never seen it before, but someone is gonna sit me down and explain to me Naruto over several hours.
So, best of luck.
Yeah, thanks.
It's quite a lengthy process, I hear.
Yeah, I'm prepared.
I would have to be physically restrained in the chair.
Fingers
reminds
crossed.
Me of that tweet that's like, good dick got me laying in bed. Like, so they both called Hunter or for real. Have we all watched Evangelion? Or is that?
No.
No, okay. In that case, that question.
Hussein sending that question
in? To fuck. it was which angel from Evangelion is your favorite and why? Mine is, just to wipe it off the board, mine is the big spider-looking guy that drips the acid. I think that's fucking sick. They get rid of him for the remakes, and I don't like that. I like him. Right. Now, here's a fucking question for you. We've just finished the Uncle series. And Miriam Weiss asks, which Bond villains do you think the Uncle Boys would stand the best chance of defeating?
Ooh.
Stromberg.
Yeah, wet Blofeld. That's a gimme. That's a gimme.
Yeah, any of the like weird Blofelds from the mid-Moore
era.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like space Blofelds. Space Blofelds.
That's their same. They're contemporaneous, aren't they? So I guess like, probably any of the older ones. It would be very funny to see the men from Uncle go up against Lucifer Safin.
Just be like, what? So what's with the mask? Like, what's the thing you're doing?
It was his toxic treasure.
Like,
and Robert Vaughn
goes, trying to do this like tortured, like horrible villain thing. Like, who I'm in therapy, and they're just like doing like stupid 60s bits at him. It would be just the clash. There would be very funny. Sedito Lashifra, actually.
Yeah, genuinely.
He's like hacking people with a machete, and Robert Vaughn's like, whoa.
I think we're sleeping on like regular ass Blofeld too. Like, any of the regular Blofelds would have fallen before Uncle pretty easily. I think.
Oh yeah, especially like especially Telly Savalas Blofeld.
To begin with, I was born without earlobes.
So good, just perfect. Opening this up to the inverse as well, which Thrush villain would stand the best chance of killing James Bond? I'm trying to figure this out, and I genuinely, and here's a fucking take, I genuinely think Mr. Alexander would have the best go at it, because he has such completely, like, opaque goals.
Yeah.
I think it would genuinely be keys. Difficult.
So he kind of is an evil James Bond.
I strongly believe, like, Leslie Nielsen in the 15 Years Later Affair would just, you know, pre-Sissy Hypnogas, would just shoot him.
Oh, yeah.
And it would just be, like, done, you know?
He'd do the thing that we were calling for the entire time and just shoot him.
That's right.
Shoot him with a gun.
Herbert Lom, also very honorable mention, very efficient villain. Don't think he'd fuck around.
Yeah, although he would try and do the, like, take off one shoe thing.
I love that guy so much.
I still think about how fucking funny that is as a means of, like, controlling someone. Like, yeah, take off one
shoe.
That
was Jay Dean.
Like,
that was... No, I'm talking about Herbert.
Was it?
He's the guy who, like, spells out his name. No. Herbert Lom is the very efficient guy who makes one mistake, which is at the very start, he kills the scientist who knows the only thing he needs. And it's like, I probably wouldn't have done that, Fabi.
Yeah, he's the... From one
Jay Dean is the one who puts him in the wine press. It's just one move.
I think you could have killed James Bond with an explosive robot.
I think Operation Robot would have worked.
On Bond, he would have tried to fuck the robot and the robot would have exploded and blown his dick off. Easy.
That's a shame. But you know what? It's Kill James Bond is the name of the podcast. Let's have one Bond question. Why not? Nell from Hell asks, you've pointed out before how previous Bond films have chased trends to try to stay relevant, like Moonraker after Star Wars, Live and Let Die, Blaxploitation, things like this. What trend do you think the next Bond films might try to emulate?
A24 Bond.
Oh, fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck off.
It's a deep emotional Bond. Exploitation of, like, Bond's inner life. We've got fucking Darren Aronofsky.
The true villain is trauma.
A24 make really, really good films.
Hey, I have not watched an A24 film I haven't liked. I want to be clear about this.
No.
They just have a specific style.
Exactly. I think the funniest possible answer is they end up chasing their own tail and they try to do a Knives Out Bond. Craig becomes the tail that wags the dog, you know.
I think if it had been a couple of years hence, they would have gone for, like, the eco-terrorist vibe.
Yes.
Somehow they've never done it, too. It's the one gap in sort of, like, their villains.
But I don't think they would now.
I'm sure they have.
No.
They may have. I mean, like,
Stromberg kind of was.
What the fuck was Safin's goal even? Like, was he an eco-terrorist?
Toxic treasure.
He wanted to infect everyone in the world with the thing that kills people, but not kill them.
Unclear. Yeah, I think it depends where we're at in terms of Marvel movies, when the next Bond film, because we don't know when the next Bond film will be. If it's, like, this year, then we could probably say pretty confidently, but we don't know what the state of the industry will be in a few years. And also, I think the industry is in and is about to go through a weird phase. I'm not sure I'm allowed to say why.
They're about to fucking AI Bond.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get Transformers Revenge
of the
Fallen.
I think AI is probably a good shout. Alice, I bet you the next villain has some kind of AI problem. Because the next Bond film, like, the early drafts and stuff will be, like, people are working on it now. And I bet you there'll be, like, AI stuff now. In terms of, like, themes, I bet that'll be in there.
What do you know about ChatGPT?
Yeah, like, Bond is going up against the kind of text-to-speech model. I wonder
like, shakes a guy's hand in a casino and realizes he's got, like, 15 fingers that all bend in 6 different directions.
Nice, but real Sam Raimi shit. Let's do that.
I wonder I wonder if we'll get a female villain at any stage, like a female main villain, which I don't think we've ever had. Closest we came was Electra King.
Yeah, Electra King.
Bernard was the main bad guy.
Fucking Fatima Blush?
Maybe.
Is Fatima Blush
villain.
Nothing to
women
you?
Can be the, women can be the dragon. Women could be the dragon, but we've never had, like, a mainline villain be a woman.
Yeah. No, it can be revealed in the third act that the true villain was the woman, but, like, she doesn't start out as the villain the entire way.
Miranda Frost in fucking Die Another Day.
Gustav Grace was the main villain.
Revealed in the third act that she is the villain.
Revealed?
Yeah. Fuck again, off! I could have got away with that.
She's the dragon. She's always the main villain's girlfriend. The Bond villain in that is Renan. And also
sometimes you just say something in a strange accent, and that's something that I learned listening to the album Transgender Street Lenin. Volume 1.
It happens to the best of us occasionally. We talk for a living, and saying things, there's always like a low level percentage chance you're gonna fuck it up. And I fuck it up a lot.
Yeah, in terms of like what it's gonna be like culturally, I don't know. Like, I'm looking at like biggest movies of 2022, and it's quite a sort of eclectic mix. So we had like Everything Everywhere All at Once, obviously.
Hard to imagine a multiverse Bond.
Yeah. Like The Whale, Darren Aronofsky's Bond. That'd be an interesting choice.
900-pound frame Bond. Of
James Bond from the entire
bariatric Bond.
Stuff like The Batman. Stuff like Nope. I don't know. We might see something that's like quite like very heavily stylized. I think an interesting direction in which to take the Bond franchise would be to make it a 60s period piece. Because yeah, I think that's the only way you can kind of avoid the politics.
100%.
It would scratch my Man from U.N.C.L.E.
And also, we just watched a 60s period piece.
I think we are very, very slowly starting to become aware of the industry in the industry of things like racial diversity and like, you know, racial politics. I think No Time to Die was in some sense, like, although we judged it quite hardly on the cultural insensitivity scale, justifiably, you can tell that they're like trying. And I think if you set it in the 60s, it makes it easier to do that because you can talk about like 60s racism and civil rights in a way that like, oh no, it's not political. It's just kind of this is just the history of the time. Like, it's not, yeah, we're fine now. It's 60 years. Well, we obviously solved it now. So yeah, if I was Amazon, I'd be saying, yeah, make it a 60s period.
Do you want to know what the current movie climate is? Movies about how the rich are bad. That's what we're putting out.
Eat the rich Bond.
Yeah, eat the rich ass Bond. But here's the thing. It's going to be like the other ones in that this is an eat the rich ass Bond where rich people can watch it and be like, ha ha ha, right? Because there's been a lot of satire of rich people, which I think has been really enjoyed by rich people, just sort of in general.
Mm. Parasite. Mm.
It's like
movie people who like are around really rich people and are able to make movies that say, I hate hanging out with you and you should be killed. And it just glances off them.
Watches it and goes, ha ha, what a movie. I watched Infinity Pool recently. So it's like, I don't even know if I liked Infinity Pool or not. It hasn't been long enough for me to make a decision, but I think there was like a bit of play in that of rich people love to watch themselves be lambasted at a remove.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, they almost did this with Craig. Like they kind of leaned into it for like Casino Royale in particular. Is like, he's like, you know, he's not even a naval officer. He's more sort of like enlisted vibes. He's sort of like he's a killer. He's tough. He doesn't belong in this world. And then they just drop it.
I think it's difficult to do that with James Bond though, because James Bond as a character always works for the British state. And the British state is like very obviously.
Except when he quits like all the time.
Well, but he's still kind of doing it, but like I'm still working for their interests, but just off the books. But like the British state is like very openly and nakedly a servant of capital and the British ruling class. Like it's so obvious, especially in the last 30 years. So I'm like, how can you even really do that with Bond without it just coming across as disingenuous?
I think you just make it anyway and make it disingenuous.
Yeah.
But yeah, I stand by my original horrifying answer, A24 Bond.
I think I would do it as a 60s period piece.
Pixar Bond.
I would do it as a 60s period piece.
It reflects Bond's upbringing as a young Chinese Canadian woman in Vancouver. It doesn't speak to 9/11 at all, which is a major failing of it. Everyone is extremely confused by it, and they abandon it and go back to sort of like just trying to do straight Bond.
Yeah, I would do it as a 60s period piece, and I would lean into the kind of like eat the rich and the sort of civil rights of the era, and I would make it that like Bond is a black guy from a council estate in the 60s, and he has to go on a mission that requires that skill set and is elevated into this world. That's how I do it. Amazon, hire me, and also he meets a smoke show 10 out of 10 transgender villain.
Toss some fucking dollars at Kill James Bond. Let us Let us help you.
The trouble is, you can't do that more than once.
Be very funny. To like do all of the politics of that and then make the villain trans.
Yeah. Just for fun.
It fits the current sort of like British political climate, but yeah, interesting.
Yeah, just for fun, we should just throw it in there.
The transness could be incidental.
I think that's putting a lot of faith.
Yeah.
I mean, if I write it, then...
Someone of a very long and quite self-indulgent name has asked, you found a djinn's lamp, and you've expended your first two wishes, right? First of all, not how that works. For your third, you get to replace the 2015 Uncle reboot with either Jean Dujardin as Napoleon Solo in a 60s Uncle movie, or 60s Robert Vaughn in a modern OSS Sunday Cert movie.
Ooh.
We're transcribing
these boys. I know which one is going to be funnier.
Which one's good?
But... they're both great.
That's very good. Yeah.
Jean Dujardin, that's like going to be an actually good movie. 60s Robert Vaughn playing a French dude? Now? 60s Robert Vaughn has like meet Macron? Beautiful. Show me the
100%.
Movie.
I would love that so much.
Macron is kind of like 60s Robert Vaughn in a way.
He's just
extremely out of touch and thinks he's suave but isn't.
Well, there was a thing going around on French Twitter for a while that Macron is just OSS 117. Like, he just is Jean Dujardin as OSS 117. It's like remarkable how much he's like French we are. And it's like, yeah, no.
Gorgeous. Yeah, we're sort of running out of this. Okay, just quick fight. We got a lot of questions that were like, is this movie about 9/11 or about being trans? So I just assembled quick fire.
Cool. Nice.
Five movies right, here.
I'm ready. Ready.
Are they about 9/11 or about being trans? Master and Commander.
Trans.
Being trans.
Okay. Disney's Robin Hood.
Trans.
Trans. Correct. Mystery Men. I don't think I've seen this one.
9/11.
I haven't seen it. Maybe
Rocky.
I can't remember. 9/11.
9/11.
Really? I would have said being trans. Okay. I'm not going to defend that point.
Creed's about being trans.
Way.
Rocky's 9/11.
Despite being set and made before 9/11, it is about being 9/11.
What? I'm that's an earnest like, point. The, I believe
the,
that.
The brainy quote ask things I mock up sometimes for what that's your problem.
Go ahead and make that
Creed
sure.
Creed
yeah.
is about being trans. Rocky is about 9/11.
This is the preview.
That's
the
right. Yeah.
Seventh Seal.
Haven't seen it.
Ooh, trans.
Okay, beautiful. Thanks ever so much. that's your quick fire.
I think we aced it, you know?
100%.
No problems.
We agreed as well, all the way through.
Yeah, we're of one mind.
Yeah, okay, two quick fire ones then finally to see us out here. Luke asks, if you had to forever associate yourself with and exclusively wear a single color, like a Mortal Kombat ninja, what color would that be?
Ooh, green. There's a lot of spectrum in green that I can work with.
I wear like an olive green my quite often. Color. Mm-hmm. I think blue for me.
Like a forest green.
Blue's the color that works best on me.
Dark red, I think, goes very well with my hair.
Yeah, nice. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Strong vibes. And then Jacob Lichtenfeld asks, if you could magically master...
Wait, I thought of a horrible answer to that question. If you say white, you accidentally ruin every wedding you go to.
And every funeral.
I'm wearing white to every wedding that I go to, and I'm like, stop it. Fuck's sake. I'm wearing a veil, even. They're so mad at me.
I'm wearing New Balance and a sort of nice sweater that I got from Next.
to a wedding? That seems like an insane thing to do.
No. I'm going to wear them. You know,
that seems like it might feel like you're slightly underdressed and maybe even mocking the concept of the wedding.
I think it's appropriate sort of formal wear, you know.
Walk past a tennis sweater and every single time I'm like, hey, that'd be good wedding attire. It's just like completely ruined the way I think about the world. That's such a room joke. Jacob Lichtenfeld asks, if you could magically master one martial art, what would it be?
Pen, chuck, see, lat. Easy. No question. I'm doing combos. Of course I am. What do you take me for? I've seen The Raid. I've seen The Raid 2. I've seen The Night Comes For Us. I'm doing Penchak's a lot.
I need to watch The Night Comes For Us.
That's so good. It's like got like gay subtext with Joe Taslim. My second answer is the Russian one that I can't think of the name of right now. The like the fucking like Russian semi-military one, because you can't learn it now because like nobody fucking trains it outside of Russia, and I'm not gonna learn like go to Russia to learn how to beat somebody's ass because that's, you know, like a bad place to take a lesson in that because they clearly suck at it right now. So like. No, Penchak's a lot.
I don't remember losers. Sorry.
Yeah,
I think my genuine answer would be judo. Because I did judo for 7 years and I really enjoyed it. And also, of all the kind of like actual real life fights I've been in, judo I think is the one that most closely approximates the conditions of an actual fight. It's not like I'm at the perfect distance from you and I'm like getting a stance and I'm like ready and I do this, but it's just like, ah, fuck, just come here, and like close quarters and like grappling and like breaking grips and stuff. I think that would be the one that would be kind of the most useful.
I'm with you.
A lot.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think judo is a really good shout.
Also, I like the judo means the gentle way.
Fine, do your little like gentle throws. I'm busy impaling guys on doors.
Yeah, but like, judo, you can also like use your opponent's weight against them. It's about like, you know, being able to
use
receive
their weight
like,
against them on this door.
Yeah,
maybe kickboxing. I appreciate it. I've stopped doing kickboxing because I moved away from where my classes were and I haven't joined a new one. But I would like it. I'd like to be good at it. I like the kick. I think it's cool. I like to kick high. But judo, yeah, I think judo is probably the best shout because again, my ass has been watching John Wick. And my boy loves to throw. And I think judo is your sort of martial art. You get the most throws out.
I still have stars in my eyes from the raid. Sorry.
Yeah, not unreasonable. Not unreasonable. And sharks a lot. Whew, what a world.
Plus, you get the free bonus thing of like the internal thing of like mastering yourself. You know.
That's true. Oh god, I've been looking
like
to do
a
that
side
for a
benefit.
Too.
Yeah.
See if I can get
I've just
on top
been
of this
running
shit.
Not mastering myself like a dipshit. You know, trying to get other people to master me.
And you become Muslim.
Yeah, exactly. I've got like an advantage, you know?
I've been walking around the place amateurish at being Devon. Can you believe it? I think
Journey them.
That is probably the last of the questions that wouldn't be like a 10-minute chat, so
beautiful. That's what a treat. That's an episode. That's a Q&A. We've done 8 of these now. We'll do a 9th one whenever we feel like it, whenever we just want to like have a chat with each other. Thank you so much for subscribing to the Patreon. It allows us to like have little chats and watch movies and think about what kind of martial arts we would like to do. And it's tremendously appreciated by all of us. Just to break kayfabe for a minute there. And we'll sort of like have a think about
I'll never break
what
kayfabe.
We're doing after the Man from U.N.C.L.E. But like it's been a tremendous sort of experience so far, and you know, long may it continue.
Yeah, see you at the live show.
That's right.
Oh yeah, that's right.
This comes out.
See you at the live show.
The week before the live show.
Mm-hmm. The tickets are long since sold out. I'm afraid
they're gone.
We did warn you they would sell quickly, but we're going to do every single Austin Powers movie, all 3 of them, because we like to suffer for our art. And those will be released on the free feed as well.
It's gonna be a full day for me because on the morning of the first live show, I'm doing voiceover for Redacted. I'm gonna be in the thing I posted in the group chat last night. So I'm doing that, the voice and the motion capture.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Motion capture.
Yeah. It's gonna be good fun.
Capture.
Get to wear the kind of the suit with the
Fuck yeah. Hell yeah. Beautiful. All right, beautiful. Well, fucking see you at the live show if you got a ticket, and if not, get good.
Scrubs. L. Bye. Cope. Teeth. Bye.
Thank you for listening to yet another episode of Kill James Bond. Next week on the free feed, From Russia with Love, with no notes. Thank you for being a patron, and thank you especially to our £15 and above patrons, who are Candy Fox, Freya Aloysius, Gustavo Lira, Jack Holmes, Mike Berg, Hannah Oberhart, Nick Boris, Johnny Del Camino, George Rohack, Kentucky Fried Commie, Devon's Secret Nemesis, Yarrick, Drone Lover, Nate Amori, Cohen Enright, Labour Delenda Est, Pete McDonald, Commissar Ozymandias, Heath Crime, Library Hitman, Callum Burney, Jack Drummond, Jonathan Curtis, Max Gamenhart, Hell, Jay Martindale, Lysamish, Kit Devine, Big Titty Goth Girl, Tarp, O, Harrison Fuller, Mothman, Trip, Isopod Gal, Oh No It's Andrew, Clara, Alex, Katie, Violet Cyber, Liz and Ash in Florida, a trans robot Corvid cultist, Annie Ruby, Wolscott, Bronan, Connor's cool big sister, Safira Lucifera, Sanction, Elizabeth Cox, Zoe Shepherd, Cumi in the A, Quinn Valeri, Loz Pycock, Josie, Roll History Pod, Alfredo, Turfs Eat Shit and Die Alone, Al Irwing, Artemis Potter and Elizabeth Ball, Wolfie, Millie, Josh Simmons, Robert Greensmith, and Lauren Baston. Thank you all so much for your continued support. As always, it lets us do this without doing adverts, and none of us want ads, do we? It would be insane. Imagine midway through an episode, we just start talking about, like, energy drinks. Terrific. Your James Bond is Alice, Abigail, and Devon. Our producer is the wonderful Nate Bethay. Our podcast art is by Matty Lubchansky, and our website is by Tom Allen. See ya.